This is Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use. I'm Levi. With me is Lisa and Travis. And today we're talking about an ideal Christmas. And what is your ideal Christmas? Who would be there? What would be around you? What would be happening? What kind of stuff would you be hanging out? It could be from people from the past. It could be people that are in the present. For me, it would be this. Here's my ideal Christmas. We're talking 40 to 60 inches of snow. We're snowed in for like a couple of days. A little bit survivalist, you know, like we have to like somehow tunnel out to the chickens, all of those types of things. Good food, hanging out, fire blazing, and just enjoying hanging. So kind of like Little House in the Prairie. Remember when they got snowed in? You guys all know this, right? And Edwards had to come because Santa Claus couldn't get across because it was too snowy and he fell in the river and he almost froze to death, but he still brought Christmas stuff there. Really great episode. Really great episode. So that's my dream, my ideal. What about you guys?
No, my ideal Christmas involves the people and hanging out, low key, yummy food, good cookies, but no snow. No snow, just sunshine. You know, the desert rat in me from Arizona says no snow on Christmas. What about you, Travis?
Man, I'm a little bit more nostalgic. I loved the times that we got to hang out at my grandparents' on their place. It's like an old farm set up and they've got woods. And I would love the snow part though, too. If it was something where you were just kind of, you had nowhere else to go. You had a fireplace and all the good food and the people around you to hang out with. Just, yeah, that kind of nothing else to do. Nowhere to go, but just might as well enjoy our time here together.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that we all talk about people, talk about our families, talk about other people. We're not just sitting by ourselves somewhere, right? And so, like, you know, Home Alone, great movie, really great movie, not an ideal setting, if you will. Your ideal setting probably has, your ideal Christmas probably has people in it. It probably has people, like, if you imagine grandma or grandpa being there or whomever that may be for you, that was just special and made those times special. Growing up, you were connected, obviously, to a family. There's traditions in there. There's like, things that you did, there are people that were around you during those times, aunts, uncles, cousins, all of those types of things. I never really thought about it though, like family. Like it just was like what you just did. Like I knew they were my family, but I didn't think about like family and context. And every family has really a context to it, right? Like how you celebrate, who you're celebrating with, and you know, where you came from, some of the traditions that were passed down, and all of those types of things are all a part of your ideal Christmas. They're in, and some of them you probably have said, I'm never doing that, and you got rid of those things, but there are other things that you just kind of pulled in, and now you have a spouse, and they have different, and you have to kind of create a context for your family, and it's kind of a blending of those things. But if you read the Christmas narrative, it starts off with a genealogy of Jesus. He came from a context. He came from all of these different people that you see in there. And there's like 17 verses that it talks about these different people. And then in verse 17, it says this. All those listed included 14 generations from Abraham to David. So he comes from Abraham. He comes from David, and then from Dave to the Babylonian exile. This is when they were all exiled. They weren't doing what they were supposed to do. They weren't living as covenant people, and Babylon comes in and takes them out, and they're exiled out into this. And then you have Nehemiah coming back in, and like Jesus's ancestors were there hanging out with Nehemiah, building a wall. And you start to read this context of this and you go, man, there is all of this tradition and all of this family thing. There's this context to him being born in this. It's not like just some random dude that we don't know. There's all of this context of who he was and what he was a part of. And everyone comes from somewhere. And Jesus came, obviously he came from God, but Jesus came through Mary. And everyone comes from someone. Jesus came into a really a simple family. If you look at the context, there's kings in there. There's like really high level people in there. And there's just like common folk. And he is born into this context of this really simple, simple family. not really a family of means, not a family of great wealth. A small village, a remote place, this Messiah was born. And Mary was, his mom was super young. Joseph practiced a trade, but they didn't have money. They're poor. So that's one part of his context. And then there's the other part of his context, who he was. He was the Messiah, the anointed one, God with us, Emmanuel. And he took on this earthly family and he left something. He left the context of what he was always was and always is in the sense of his glory. He didn't leave his divinity. He left his glory and he took on flesh. He didn't have flesh before then. He takes on flesh and he's subject to pain. He was never subjected to pain and suffering and the temptations of this world. He's subjected to all of that. He's born to parents who don't have money. He's, you know, in a context, he's the creator of the world. He is God. He has everything, everything at his disposal. Everything is just one breath away from who he is. And he left all of it. That's part of his context of coming to this world.
I guess as I'm thinking about the familial context of Jesus and who he was and what he had and didn't have, how do you think that his understanding of his family lineage impacted his divinity? Do you know what I mean? Like, as he's walking around in the earth and he has everything and nothing, what do you think? Is there something that that his family heritage said, like, spoke into that? Because, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think that, obviously, he comes from a godly family, right?
Right.
You know, like, what is it, 40 days afterwards, they're going in and they're like,
yeah,
we're gonna make a sacrifice, we're gonna give this offering, and, like, rich people would give, like, a fatted calf. And then you had, like, all these stipulations from, like, if you're middle class, you give this, like, type of thing. But if you were poor, you could give like two turtle doves, and that's what his family gives. Like, it wasn't like, well,
yeah, his family gives that, but they also give everything.
Right.
Right. I mean, Mary brings him with nothing, but then gives everything.
Yeah.
When he dies. I mean, there's just something really interesting about their poverty to me that I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So to answer your question, as he begins to learn, like, we don't have a lot about, like, when he was a toddler. You can read some Gnostic gospels about some of that stuff, like he's chucking people off of buildings and raising them from the dead and stuff. Not true, but it's still an interesting story. And so you can read some of that stuff, but you do have some scriptural understanding of, like, when he's 12. He understands things in a way that adults are like, who is this kid? Like, he's like a prodigy when he goes to the temple and he begins to teach. And so I would expect that as he's learning and understanding this, and he's going, man, these things are talking about me. These things are all pointing toward me. All these prophecies are pointing toward me. When Isaiah's talking about how he talks about the Messiah coming, like, he's going, man, that's me. That's me. Not in an arrogant way, but in a realization way. And so I think some of, like, the Abrahamic covenant that has happened, where he's gonna produce, you know, his ancestors are gonna be, you know, like the sand on the sea or stars in the heavens. He's going, man, this is how it's gonna get done right here. Yes, there's a nation of Israel, but it's still a pretty small, relatively small nation. But these people who are going to be my people because they're going to believe in who I am, that I think is starting to kind of take shape in his mind.
Well, and like you said, his parents were godly. And obviously, we know the Christmas story, and both of them were visited by angels that said, hey, this is coming. Get ready for it. Surprise. Best Christmas ever. And so they knew this. So as parents, like, you try to instill knowledge and, like, find the things that your kids are good at and where their talents and giftings are, and, like, kind of build into those things, invest in those things. So you got to imagine, like, we know Joseph trained him up in his trade as a carpenter, but you'd have to imagine too that they trained him up in, like, you're something special. You're something, like, God's got, not, you know, this humongous mission for you, this plan for your life.
Well, I think that probably as just growing up, I don't know if they told him that, but like they had to be kind of going, okay, when is he going to be?
Right.
What is he going to do? Right.
When's he going to show his power?
Yeah. Like, is he going to burp and all of a sudden, whoa, like, oh, how is this going to work? Right. Like, but I think that there's other things, not just the trade. Like, Joseph is a man of integrity. Mm-hmm. Like, right from the get-go, you see that in the text. He's just this man of integrity. He's like, man, this girl's pregnant. I don't really understand this, but I'm going to do this. I'm going to divorce her. They weren't actually married, but in their context, if you're betrothed, it was the same kind of legal contract. He's like, hey, I'm going to do this kind of quietly. I'm going to protect her. And, you know, because she could have been killed for punishment they could have carried out. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do this. So he's like this man of integrity, and he cared about women. And you see through Jesus's ministry, all through his ministry, women are elevated in a totally different way. Children are elevated in a totally different way. And I just have to think that, yes, he was God, but I think some of that came from his earthly daddy. Like he learned like the value of women, the value of kids, the value of like just really dignity of humanity.
Well, even the value of God too, right? Because that was when he was 12 and they left him at the temple. Like they were at the temple together as a family. Mm-hmm. And so Joseph is still instilling even those values of a relationship with God and being underneath that instruction and in community. And mm-hmm. And I think that we look at the statistics in America of how important it is for a dad to be in the home and the life of his family, especially when it comes to spiritual side of things, the impact that dad has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you see, like, in the text, you know, Joseph is struggling through some of this stuff. And it says, as he considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, Joseph, son of David. And it's really back right to that context again. Like, hey, you're a part of this lineage. The angel said, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for the child within her was conceived by the Holy Spirit, and she will have a son, and you are to name him Jesus, for he will save the people from their sins. And all of this occurred to fulfill the Lord's message through his prophet. Look, the virgin will conceive a child. She will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God is with us. And so Joseph wakes up, and he did as the angel of the Lord commanded. He did as what God had told him to do. And so there's this reverence and this understanding of God in his context and his lineage.
I was just thinking about, like, when we think about the lineage of Jesus and then the children of Israel and how many times God, through the prophets and through Moses, called out for a people in order to be for them to be with him and for him to be with them. And what an amazing thing to realize that every name in the lineage of Jesus, every single one is then they find their ultimate satisfaction. His whole family finds their satisfaction in the reality of the nearness of God, who is their child in their family. And I just think God with us is such an interesting, is such a beautiful way to think about the end of that lineage, so to speak, and the beginning of this new and beautiful reality of Jesus in the flesh and for us.
So the first Christmas happens, and many probably of us have heard the story before that, you know, they go to Bethlehem. He's born in a manger. There's no room for him in the inn. And so we know that part of the story. But as you think about that story, it's like the first Christmas, and they don't have any gifts. They have no figgy pudding. I don't even really know what figgy pudding is, but
I don't even know if that's a gift.
Right. But they have like this incredible gift, like God with us in the flesh. Can you imagine? Like, I remember the first time I changed my kid's diaper, and my kid's pretty ordinary. He's an ordinary kid, right? Like, this is like God. Like, I'm like, I'm going to mess that one up. I was nervous I was going to mess it up on an ordinary kid. But like, knowing who this is, like, ooh, I don't know. Is he comfortable? You know what I mean? Like, I think they probably got all over it. But there would be just a little bit of tension in that, I would think.
Lots,
I don't know.
Lots of pressure.
Yeah, there's some pressure here. Yeah. But, I mean, their first Christmas didn't have anything to do with gifts, like what we would think of gifts. It had to do with the gift. And the gift wasn't just for them. It was for all of humanity. And they're holding the gift. They're like, you know, they have the ring. Right? That is in Lord of the Rings, right? Like, they have the precious. That is the precious, right? Like, that's the thing, right? Like, and it's not just for them in the present. It's for the future, and it's for the past. And I don't think they totally, I don't know if they could have understood all of that. But, like, they had, like, this most incredible human to ever be born, who was God, who is going to die on a cross for their sins, for my sins, for your sins. And like this little package, this gift, that big, that powerful. But they had family around them, right? That's all they had. They didn't have like all of the things that we have in our culture, the gifts opening, those types of things. But I think all of ours is like a... It's a beautiful thing, Christmas. Christmas is a weird thing. Like, I feel like people are more gentle and kind and generous and all of those things during Christmas. And I think it's kind of like universally that's true. Whether you believe in Jesus or not, I think it's kind of just, it's just, there's just something here about that. But it's a mirage of what actually happened in that moment. Like, it's a celebration of that first, the real ideal Christmas. But it's not the ideal Christmas already happened, right? It already happened when Jesus came and they had this moment to meet the creator of the world in flesh, which is, I don't know if there's words really to put to the feeling, the hope, the joy that was not just for them, but for all people.
Yeah, when I think about the ideal first Christmas, you're right. There weren't a lot of presents. There were no presents. In fact, there was nothing except Jesus and his family. But they didn't even have family nearby on that night, which it was a very lonely thing, I would imagine, for Mary and Joseph to be by themselves there in the stable. And everything about the first Christmas smacks of contradiction when we match it up with what we say our ideal Christmas is. I think that's interesting. It's such a sharp distinction to me when I think about what my December 25 is going to look like and what Mary's December 25 looked like.
Well, the crazy part is the city of David, everyone, they did have like actual family, right?
They had cousins. They were all there paying taxes. Yep.
Yeah, they were
for
all
the census.
They were all there, yeah, but they're like, sure. Yeah, no. You can't stay at our house.
Right, that's the thing.
They were like rejected.
Yeah.
And so their Christmas started with rejection, which is like, whoa. But their rejection was, it ended with this most incredible thing, that Jesus was going to be born in a manger, and he was not just going to be an average kid. He's going to be the savior of the world. And it was for the people who were looking for him. It was for Abraham, who by faith came to God and it was obedient to God and righteousness was given. It was for King David. It was for all of these people in that lineage. That little kid was being born for them and for his parents and for his brothers and sisters that are coming later in the story. It was for them and it's for us. And it's the greatest news that the world has ever heard. Jesus was born on that day, the ideal Christmas. That's good news you can use.
Thanks for hanging out with us this week. If you guys have questions or comments or you'd like to share a topic that you'd like to hear us cover, you can email those over to travis@evangelup.org. If you'd like to catch any of the previous Pearls and Swine episodes, you can find those at evangelup.org, or you can search out Evangel Houghton on your preferred podcast platform.